Vancouver is calling, and whether you're in town for business, relocating, or embracing the flexibility of remote work, we've got the perfect place for you. Meet Smith House, an apartment-style hotel in the heart of Yale Town, where stylish, fully furnished studios, one- and two-bedroom apartments are designed to feel like your home away from home. And this fall, its sister location, Kiefer House, opens its doors in vibrant Chinatown, ready to offer a new breed of flexible, design-forward stays. Now, here's what makes these stays different. Radical flexibility. No front desk, no key cards, no rigid rules. Just seamless, contactless check-in and the freedom to stay a night, a week, or as long as you want. Each apartment is kitted out with locally curated amenities, and both locations put you steps from Vancouver's best. Think stadium concerts, sporting events, buzzy cocktail spots, world-class dining, and neighborhoods full of culture. Book your next stay at smithhouse.com, that's S-M-I-T-H-E, house.com, or sign up now at kieferhouse.com, K-E-E-F-E-R, house.com. And here's something special for Glory listeners. For a limited time, get 20% off and priority early check-in based on availability with code GLORY. That's all caps GLORY. Two houses, two neighborhoods, one radically flexible way to stay in Vancouver. Enjoy! If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. It is morning over there in LA.
Yes.
Where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles, where I live and everything. And yep, 10 a.m. here.
It looks beautiful outside your window. Lots of sun and foliage.
Yeah, it's kind of been, I would say, 80 every day for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Amazing. This is what we love.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so excited to be chatting with you because, you know, we focus on just people who are building cool things. And that includes a lot of companies or communities. And what you've built with your brand is, you know, I heard that you're about to celebrate a big anniversary coming up with the brand. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is a testament to, the brand's ability to build and resonate with a community. And, you know, it's hard to run a business these days. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Very sweet.
So you launched the brand in 2005. And this year marks two decades of business.
Wild.
Since then, I mean, you know, entire fashion empires have risen and fallen, and social media has completely reshaped culture. And in a lot of ways, luxury has also been redefined. And yet your brand has really endured and not only just endured, but really become part of the cultural conversation in many ways. When you look back, what has been, you know, one of the most important reasons why you think your brand has managed to be a part of that continuous conversation and thrive ultimately?
You know, when I began Jennifer Meyer Jewelry and I started to do this, there was no Instagram. There was no social media. There was no quote unquote branding. There was no, what story are you trying to tell? You know, there was nobody who was doing investments. It was sort of like the way I began was, if you have a good idea, figure out a way to execute it, and hopefully people will like it. And if they like it, you may or may not have a successful company. So that, at least that was the way I sort of envisioned it. So when I started my company, I had no experience in business. I had no experience in jewelry. I had, you know, pretty much dropped out of college at that point. And I worked for Giorgio Armani. I worked for Glamour magazine. I worked for Giorgio Armani. And then I worked for Ralph Lauren. So I was sort of in this like fashion world. And I loved it. I had always loved it. I had always, even though I grew up in LA and in this Hollywood world, I loved reading magazines. I loved seeing what people were doing. You know, you couldn't go online and look at things. So magazines came out every Wednesday afternoon and I would wait for them. And I remember buying every single one and sitting on my bed and just like, couldn't be more excited to like comb through each page. So I really wanted to design jewelry. I had no clue how to do it. And I really taught myself. I really was like, okay, I'm going to figure this out. I took a beading class. I realized, okay, that's not for me. I saved every penny I had and would go downtown. I had an idea for a leaf. So I would go downtown and I would have somebody, you know, tell me, okay, this mold is going to cost you X amount of dollars. I'm like, what's a mold? You know, what is the price of gold? What do you mean diamonds, pave? Like I literally taught myself every single step by walking into all of these offices. Now, some people were like, this is going to cost you $100. Someone would say, this is going to cost you $300. I'm like, but the person told me the exact same thing was going to cost me like a third of that, you know? It was like, you sort of started learning everything. So I even like forget where I went with this, but I think the thing about my business and maybe why it sort of lasted this long or withstood the test of time is that I really had no noise around me. I really wasn't able to see what other people were doing or what they were creating unless I sort of drove to a store and was in that store and seeing it or seeing it in a magazine once a week. Other than that, it wasn't Fast and Furious where it was like every single minute you opened Instagram or TikTok or whatever, there was a new product, a new company, a new cool person. It was like, I didn't have any of that. So I think I was really able to sort of, I don't love this term, but like stay in my lane and believe in what I was doing and just begin to design things that I loved that I thought people like me would love.
Yeah. And staying focused on that lane.
Yeah, not worrying about what everybody else is doing around me. I mean, social media is amazing. I think Instagram is one of the most amazing tools of all time to market your business now. But the downfall is that it's really hard to not get sidetracked to what everybody else is doing and seeing like how successful everybody else is and how much better their social media is than yours and how much smarter, how much more successful, how much more beautiful. Like we've all fallen into that rut at moments. And we also all know that social media more or less shows your best moments.
So absolutely. Absolutely.
I think you gotta stay focused.
So when we talk about, you know, Giorgio Armani, Ralph Lauren, Glamour, you know, these are brands that are titans of industry and are masters of cultivating brand ecosystems and experiences. What did you learn from your time and experience working under those big kind of industry heavyweights that you then took with you on your own journey?
Oh my God, I learned so much. I don't know where to begin. First of all, work is work. When you get hired by one of these companies, your job is your job and everybody else's job is your job too. If people need your help, you need to jump in. There's never, if something doesn't get done, you can't say to your boss, oh, that wasn't my responsibility. That's like, it's like you are a team, like full meaning of a team. And I loved that. When work started at 9 a.m., we were there at 9 on the dot. There wasn't a question of, oh, so sorry, I'm running late. So sorry, I'm in traffic. I just grabbed a coffee. It was like, you showed up at 9 a.m. And work ended when work ended. It wasn't like you weren't clocking out at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. It was like when the work was done, you left. Some nights that was 6 p.m. Most nights that was 9 p.m. You know, it wasn't even like a question. You worked on the weekends. You asked for raises when you had a reason to ask for a raise. It wasn't just because you had been there for 9 months and worked really hard. You know,
right.
It was like you had been there for 2 years and you had proved yourself.
Yeah. So it gave you a sense of work ethic that you.
In the best way.
Yeah.
In the best way.
Do you think that work culture is very different from that now?
I think there are moments where it tends to be. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that it's hard to say, and I think everybody's an individual and people have different work ethic, but I think that there's just, people are looking at what everybody else is doing and it looks so easy and it looks like everybody's making so much money and it all looks so simple, but it's like hard work pays off for you no matter what, right? Whatever position you're in life, it was like hard work pays off. You just, we all started, I mean, at least I started at the bottom of the totem pole. You know, it's like when I was in high school, I was getting coffee for people. That was, you know, I went to go work as like an assistant PA to an assistant to an assistant to an assistant. It was like, there was nothing frilly about it. And I think that it taught me when I started my own company, people now say to me, okay, I'm starting a business. How many people should I hire? And I'm like, well, that's a very hard question for me to answer. They're like, well, when you started, how many people did you hire? I was like, nobody. I didn't hire anyone until I started to make money and I could hire somebody and pay them. I was like, I was doing the design, the FedEx, the invoicing, you know, the packaging. It's like you walked into my house and my entire living room was like papers, you know, jewelry was like this much a part of it. So it taught me that I think the best thing for anybody is when you want to start something is to really know every single aspect of it, not just have some big idea and want to hire a bunch of people. You're not going to have a successful company like that.
Yeah.
You have to be passionate about it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, in the early 2000s, when you launched the brand, the way that we talk about influence today, I think, was really, you know, the, you know, red carpets and magazines were really like an epicenter of that. And to an extent, there still is a lot of that conversation that's centered around those areas, but it's also a lot, you know, centered on like TikTok and Instagram and social media. How has your thinking about, you know, quote unquote influence evolved as the culture has shifted? And what does that mean to you today because of, you know, the ecosystem that you live in and that you are working in, which is very much celebrity centered, Hollywood as well? How have you seen the notion of influence change over the years and over the course of your business? And what does it mean to you today?
I mean, what I'm starting to go back to in my head, InStyle magazine, for example, it would come out once a month and there would be a page, which would be a celebrity page. And I remember Courtney Cox on one of those pages years ago, and this is prior to Instagram, and she posted that one of my earrings was her favorite earring, a hoop. For that entire year, that hoop, I could not keep it in stock. Sold. Because people who were fashion people or liked pretty things or whatever it was, they loved InStyle magazine. So they would wait for InStyle to come out every month and they would do their shopping. And they would look at what was in there, or, and that would sort of, that magazine would last, whether you were in a doctor's office or a nail salon or whatever the case may be, right? You would look at that magazine for a while.
Yeah. And they were dense. I remember my mom picking those ones up and they were pretty, I mean, compared to today's magazine standards, they were pretty, pretty thick magazines.
That's all we had.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's all your mom had. That's all I had. So it was like, you wanted it dense. You were excited to go page to page because that was your influence. That was like, what am I buying? What are the cool jeans? What's the cool vibe? So nothing was fast fashion. It was like you had to love something and purchase it. So now you see something on Instagram by whomever you follow or don't. Now we're getting served things all day long. Mm-hmm. You buy it then and there, or you forget about it. Unless you're served the ad, unless you're served a reminder. You know what I mean? And now, at the time, there were like a handful of cool people. You know what I mean? Who, by the way, are still cool. Jen Aniston and Courtney Cox and whoever those the time was of all these people that, you know, Reese Witherspoon and I remember Rihanna wearing my good luck necklace million years ago, like just the coolest people in the world. But there were a handful of the coolest people. Now you open social media and there's 1,000 cool people a day. And you can get influenced very quickly, which is great for some brands. I mean, amazing. But you also, as a brand, have to keep like designing pieces that people love and make sure that you're running a good business. I mean, a business is the whole thing behind it.
Right, right. Where do you think you learned your skills on how to run a good business? The you know, I guess the quote unquote kind of like not the glamorous side, not the sexy side, the accounting, the HR, whatever it is, like where do you think you learned how to run a good business on top of putting out all the things that we as consumers love to see from jewelry brands?
100%. It's my belief that to be successful at anything, you really have to figure out how to be a good people person.
Yeah.
You really have to know how to communicate with people, how to listen to people, how not to take things personally, how to let things roll off your shoulders, how to be like, all right, well, they're being complicated and let them be complicated. I don't need to be right. I literally do not need to be right. I don't care about being right. I care about the job getting done. I care about it getting done beautifully. And I also think that learning how to communicate clearly is really important. Somebody once said to me, a sure way of not getting what you want is not saying what you need. And it's such a simple line, but it's so important because we think that people all day long, right? Whether it's your parents, whether it's your spouse, your siblings, your best friend, your coworkers, you think they know you so well that you shouldn't have to tell them all the time, like what you need, what you want, what's going to work for you. But at the same time, we are all going through the day doing the best we can. We are all trying. We are all like, it's like, unless it's your child where you need to be responsible for your children, in my opinion, we're all thinking about ourselves, not because we're being egotistical, but we're trying to like, we've got to manage this. We've got to pick up this. We've got to call this person. We've got to get this work done. Like the days are full. So I think that being able to say to people like, hey, if you could do X, Y, Z for me, that would be amazing. Great. You've said it. You've given people an opportunity to rise up and show up for you in whatever way you need. And then if they don't, you can have a discussion and figure it out. But I think like really honing in on your people skills is number one for sure.
How much of that do you think is, especially as a business owner, about and listening to people and being able to empathize and also communicate what you need? How much a part of that do you think is about like setting aside ego? And because I feel like a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs, you know, ego can be such a big thing. And once you kind of learn to let go of that and just be able to communicate simply and effectively and be able to just have honest, empathetic conversations, it just opens a lot of doors. But how do you think that that plays into the larger conversation as an entrepreneur?
I mean, I personally think at every turn in your life, in the negative way, ego is a waste of time. And you're going to get nowhere. I mean, it's great to have an ego and be proud of yourself. It's great to have an ego and you know, show off like the great things that you've done and be proud. Like those moments are good. You know what I mean? Like you could go look at, you put an outfit on and you're like, damn, I look good today. Like, great. That kind of ego, like all day long. Yeah. But ego of I'm right, you're wrong. This is my company, not yours. You work for me. You might as well not start a company. You will fail.
Because you're managing people.
You're managing people. People are going to hate you. You know what I mean? Listen, it works for some people. Don't get me wrong. But in general, it will not work. We are not in a time that will work.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, building on that, you know, running a jewelry business in 2005 looked what I imagine to be very different than running one in 2025. What has become easier along the way and what's become harder?
I wouldn't say like anything has necessarily become easier. I think that I know myself. I know my business. I know my customer. I know my team. I feel very confident in like who I am and what I've built. So I don't question myself. I'm not, you know, worried or, but it's complicated. You know, the retail is different in a big way. The price of gold has skyrocketed and there's definitely, it's definitely a different world. That is for sure.
How do you, and I guess building on that, how do you think about retail strategy today when, you know, luxury and just retail strategy is split between e-commerce, direct to consumer, brick and mortar, and social media. Like there's so many different avenues that exist now as compared to before. What do you think about retail strategy today and how does that inform the business that you run?
You know, I think that there's certain doors that are very important to be in if you can for visibility. I think like I've had a very, very, very over a decade long relationship with Net-a-Porter. They're amazing. Barney's at the time was A+. There, I can't even describe my business there. Millions of dollars a year. It was phenomenal in every single way. I think what was amazing about those times is I think while I was at Barney's, I had two buyers over my 10 years. And in that time, those buyers really invested in their designers. And it made the designers then in turn really invest in them. So like I didn't go to other quote unquote department stores because I was at Barney's and it was doing amazing. And those buyers were like, we've got you. So whether somebody had, let's say one season was like a little bit down from the next, it didn't stop them from doubling down on next season. Right. They were like, let's go. Like, don't let that deter you. And then the next season would be gangbusters. And they would keep their same designers. It wasn't like every week there was a new designer, there was something else they were trying. It's like, and people respected it and they loved it. You know, it was like a Barney shopper was only a Barney shopper. That was it. They went to Barney's, they went shopping, they weren't going around other places. So moments like that, you really saw the success of both teams. Now it's like, it's a little bit different. There's a lot of different buyers. There's a lot of different designers. People are trying out new things. And I see it affecting a lot of people.
So what do you think business owners and entrepreneurs need to do today in order to just try to keep up with all of these different things that they need to be servicing and different buyers, different platforms, all these different things. And also just having to be an expert in SEO now and an expert in marketing and all these different things that we're not necessarily expected of with entrepreneurs before?
Well, first thing is take a deep breath. Know that you can't and you shouldn't do it all at once.
Mm.
That it won't be possible. So while you're starting out, go slow, go step by step. Get good at the things you can get good at and focus on those things. And as you begin to grow, make sure that the people that you're hiring for whatever position you're hiring them for are not only really good at understanding that position and understanding what they need to do, but that they're willing to really learn, that they're willing to grow, that they know they don't know everything, that they just want to go deep. And you're not going to be an expert at everything. Now, I mean, what I would have done for ChatGPT back in the day. You know what I mean? I mean, truly, like, I can learn so much. It's like, don't stop learning. Don't stop digging. Don't stop trying new things. And if something works, like, dive in on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If it works, like, keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. Fix it,
you know? And then something else will happen and you'll have to pivot. Like, get ready to pivot.
Be nimble. Yeah.
For sure.
Is there anything that still kind of keeps you up at night as a founder, whether it's like supply chain, customer loyalty, community cultivation? Is there something that's still, because over the course of 20 years, you mentioned that you have a really good, strong sense of who you are as a brand, your customer base, your identity, and everything like that. But is there anything that still just keeps you up just as a business owner that I think other up-and-coming entrepreneurs can still kind of feel, okay, like, I'm not the only person that's like dealing with this right now?
I would say the number one thing that keeps me up at night as a business owner is my team. Mm-hmm. To do good by them and right by them. And wanting to be successful, to be able to take care of the team. And, you know, as you grow, you hire more people, and then a lot of people depend on you. And so sometimes sometimes something that I've struggled with in my life is being a people pleaser. And I don't like to hurt anybody's feelings. But there's also, you know, the term clarity is kindness. So sometimes you've got to be really clear to be kind. You know, that's very complicated sometimes. So in my life, I've really tried to not be as much of a people pleaser and be able to say to people like, hey, I needed to, let's do this or let's try that. Where sometimes you just got to be really blunt, which I'm not good at, but I hope people do, is be able to say like, hey, you're not doing a great job. Here's what's not working. Here's what you're not doing right. And either it has to change or this isn't the place for you. Because what happens is we keep people for too long. They don't do a great job because it's probably not the place for them. That's actually probably not what they want to be doing. So you're not only doing yourself a disservice and your team by keeping them on your team, you're energetically doing them a disservice by not giving them the opportunity to like go fly and go find the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really think, you know, I have people on my team that have been with me for 15 years. I mean, Caitlin's been with me for 15 years. So I keep people for ever. I never want anyone to leave. You know, it's like Sid has been with me for 10 years, Margot forever. Like I have a team of people and I love them all, but a lot of them have been with me for a very long time. And so I like that. But there's also people that had been with me for a while, a long time. And it was the time for them to go find their new thing had probably been for a while. Neither one of us wanted to say it. So it's giving people the opportunity to either grow in the position or go find something else. And the people that actually no longer work with Jennifer Meyer Jewelry, not one of them is in jewelry anymore. Hmm. And it's sort of an interesting thing because that was not their path. They were amazing at the time. Most of them were amazing at the time. Most of them were great to have on the team. But they're not in jewelry. It's just interesting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Wasn't where they were supposed to be. So I think really knowing your team, knowing people's strengths, knowing when to keep people, knowing when to let people move to the next phase of their life, I think it's all important.
What do you think is the lesson that has taken you the longest to learn as an entrepreneur?
Oh, God. Whew, good question. I mean, it seems silly, but don't stress. Just don't stress. There's no reason. I always say to my kids, worrying is like walking around with an umbrella waiting for it to rain. It's pointless.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's not my quote. It's probably like Buddha's quote or something, but I really try and remember that every day when I start to get overwhelmed or something's going on or, oh my God, what are we going to do? I just remind myself that over 20 years, there has been 1,000 million fires to put out. And every single time the fire has been put out, and me stressing was just a waste of time and energy for me. It's like, find the solution. Like, everything can be a math problem. To every math problem, there's a solution. Like, just find the solution. It might not be the perfect first solution for you at the time, but it's a solution and it'll get you to the next phase.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
We're going to figure it out. Yeah. We're going to figure it out.
And, you know, over the course of the past 20 years, a lot has happened in the world, from a global pandemic, the economy changing, all these different things. What have those kinds of peaks and valleys taught you about resilience and staying the course and staying focused?
I mean, listen, when COVID happened, of course, the world was so scared and we didn't know what was going to happen. And all of our retail stores closed down and it was terrifying. And after a couple months, my company had never done better. It was incredible. So for the company, I mean, obviously the world was scary and you wanted to help people and everyone was scared for their health and whatever. But if we're just strictly talking about business, it was a really, really good time for us. I mean, it was like nobody was traveling. Nobody was buying gas. Nobody was going out to eat. Everyone was staying home. Everyone was cooking. Like, everyone was saving money, more or less. Yeah. So they had more money to spend on things that made them happy. It was a great time for us. So you got to always, now this is very different. Tariffs suck. It's screwing up a lot of businesses for my friends. I don't work with China, so like it doesn't affect me. I make all of my jewelry in Los Angeles, but I'm watching what it's doing to friends' businesses, and it's a big problem. Price of gold is affecting me. I mean, it's going to affect anyone who sells jewelry. So that's scary. But times are going to keep changing. They're going to keep evolving. And when you're in that moment, like, don't have a prayer, have a plan. I pray it's going to get better. I pray the pandemic ends. I pray the price of gold goes low, you know, dips. I pray, don't. Just have a plan.
Do prayers something. Yeah.
Prayers are great. Don't not pray. I mean, whatever, but like also have a plan.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, building on that, what is there an experience along the way that has given you the courage? Like, what experience, I guess, has given you the most courage to stand up for your ideas, your worth, and ultimately your vision, and your place at the table within the industry and the community?
You know, very early on, I did something called the Vogue Fashion Fund. Mm-hmm. And that was with the CFDA, and it was incredible. And I was all of a sudden in a room with Diane von Furstenberg and Anna Wintour and Jenna Lyons and Andrew Rosen and all of mm-hmm. these amazing people. And I was with this team. It was 10 of us in the group of like competing designers. And it was Wes Gordon from Carolina Herrera. It was Andrea Lieberman from ALC. It was, oh shit, I never turned an email from her. I need to deal with that. It was, I love her so much. It was Greg Chait from Elder Statesman and Tabitha Simmons. And it right. was, it was such an amazing group of people. Ilisteva sunglasses. And there were like one winner and two, Jennifer Fisher was in it. One winner, two runner ups. And the winner was Elder Statesman. And then it was me and Tabitha Simmons were the runner ups. So it was like kind of three winners and it was amazing. And you worked really goddamn hard in that thing. I mean, you were doing like, you know, I mean, anyway, you were with all of these judges all the time. You were jumping through hoops, doing all these designs, like really proving yourself. And, you know, I did this amazing photo shoot with Peter Lindbergh for Vogue magazine and all these things. And in that time, it was really scary to walk into those rooms, you know, and immediately Anna Wintour sort of just ingratiated herself to me. I can't even explain it. Like, she was so warm. She was so lovely. She had so much advice. Like, she was so incredible to be around. It was Anna Wintour. Like, I was terrified, you know? Same with Diane von Furstenberg, like amazing. So it was like these women who were like big and powerful and scary were actually like, hey, I got you. How can I help? What advice do you need? Here's my email. Here's my cell phone. Like, anything you need. And I just thought it was the most beautiful thing. So it was like, that moment, and as a winner, you got a mentor, and DVF became my mentor, and wow. and you got it for a year. And I remember at the end of the year, I called her, and I was like, wait, does this mean you're not my mentor anymore? And she said, honey, I'm going to be your mentor forever. And there are still days where I call her, and I'm like, hey, I've got a problem. And she has an answer. This woman is a genius, and she is all for women. And it really gave me, she gave me so much confidence in that time as a young designer, figuring it out. And she was like, you've got this. What do you need? I'll always support you. I mean, when I was getting a divorce, she was one of the people that I called. And I was like having a hard time. And she was just like, gave me the best advice. And it changed my life in one day. So, you know, Diane, Anna, like these people really gave me confidence to be like, just go for it. Like, you've got this. We believe in you.
Yeah. 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 At the beginning of your career, did you always have a very clear idea of your identity as a designer and as a business owner? Or
no.
How long did it take for you to find your voice ultimately?
I had no clear idea. That was the beauty of when I started a business. Nobody made you feel like you had to have a narrative.
Who had to have it all figured out.
Nope. Nobody made you feel, and still I hope people don't feel like they need to have it all figured out, but like, who are you? What do you stand for? What's your business? Like, I would have failed. I would have failed. And that's really hard for a designer to feel in the very beginning. There's so much evolution after you begin. You know, there's so many missteps. There's so many things that you do. It's like, there were so many designs that I started with that are still in the line that I love. And then there were so many designs that like, what was I thinking designing that? You know,
right.
So you have to evolve. There were, I'm 20 years older. So, I mean, think about all of us where we were 20 years ago. Like, there's so much growth in that. And I'm so lucky that I didn't have to, you know, put out a mission statement. I'm so lucky that I didn't have to say like, here's who I am. Here's the story behind my brand. Like, here's why I'm designing it. Like, I was literally like, my grandmother was an artist. She loved jewelry. I love jewelry. I have no idea what I'm doing, but luckily people like the pieces. You know, it was really what it was.
Yeah. 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 So looking back on those 20 years, what's like one memory that still gives you goosebumps today after, you know, everything that you've seen and built and all the people you've met? Like, what's something that one still gives you goosebumps? And then what's another memory that still humbles you?
The memory that gives me goosebumps is I had designed my leaf and through the costume designer, somehow Jen Aniston basically saw the leaf and wore it for the breakup. And it was her first movie after her and Brad Pitt had broken up. She was as gorgeous as ever, as she still is. She was and is America's sweetheart. And this movie, everyone was waiting to see. And she wore my leaf the entire show or entire movie, and it launched my career. It was something that it just happened. I had no control over it. It was the most beautiful story. And when that movie came out, it was basically leaf mania. It just started my career. Now, you can't be a one-hit wonder. You have to keep on designing pieces that people love. But it really gave me an opening into the world where people were like, who's Jennifer Meyer? So that was a major pinch me moment. And I, you know, she's my sister and one of my best friends, was not at the time, but quickly after, like, the universe just, we were meant to be. What humbles me, or what's one moment that humbled me?
Yeah, or keeps you humble today, even when you think about it.
Well, I would say Barney's for 10 years was my number one account. We did massive, massive business together year after year. And one day it closed without any warning. And that really was a huge pivot that had to happen. They didn't return any of my jewelry. They didn't pay any of my bills. They owed me hundreds of thousands of dollars. And yeah. That sucked. And that was tough. And it made me know in that moment that you have to be very careful having all your eggs in one basket. I had been talking, you know, there were all these rumors about Barney's, and I had been talking to the president and this person. They were like, I assure you, it's all good. We've got your back. You're going to be fine. And boom, the next day it closed. So we pivoted quickly because I did not have all my eggs in one basket, even though that basket was my most successful basket.
A big one. Yeah.
It was a big basket by far. But do not have all your eggs in one basket, because you really, really, really cannot trust anybody. I don't want to say cannot trust, but you
rely.
You're not in control of other people's businesses. So you never know what's happening behind closed doors.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think a lot of businesses these days are learning that lesson. Pivoting to kind of just, you know, where we're at today and moving forward, what do you think is the most interesting thing that's happening in fashion and luxury and jewelry, I guess, right now? For you personally.
You know what? I still love fashion. I still love jewelry. I still love accessories. I still love seeing what people are doing and what people are creating. And there's so many amazing designers out there and beautiful pieces. And I just love all of it. I mean, there's nothing. I love seeing what people create. I appreciate luxury. I appreciate, you know, fun, less expensive, more accessible items. I have an 18-year-old. It's the best thing is watching what she loves, you know, seeing what she's into, what her and her friends think are cool.
Yeah. Do you think that the notion of luxury has changed over the years and how we define it, like, and also how you define it as a brand?
No, I think that people who love luxury still love luxury and still love to invest in it. And they like, you know, pieces and designer pieces. I think that the thing that's most important that I realized over time is when a customer likes your stuff, they keep coming back to you. They trust you. They want to keep adding on to their collection, whether it's, you know, fancy clothes, whether it's jewelry, like whatever it is. So I think that making sure as a business owner that your quality still stays the same, that you still stay close to your customers, that you're still staying on top of things. And not worrying about what everybody's doing around you, because the people that love luxury and the people that love your brand will keep purchasing your brand.
Yeah. Yeah. If, you know, if Anna gave you a ring today and was like, I would like you to be a co-chair of the Met Gala, the next Met Gala, who would you want to be your co-chairs with you? And what would you want to be the theme of that year that you'd be co-chairing?
Oh my God, what? This is a crazy question. Well,
your buddy Anna.
Yeah, call me Anna. My cell phone has not changed. I would probably be Denim and Diamonds. I think that'd be a lot of fun. I know that it's not total glam because of the gowns and stuff, but I think we could figure it out. I think people would have a really cool interpretation on it and a lot of diamonds.
Yeah.
I'm thinking if it's Denim and Diamonds, I'm like, is Dolly Parton available? I think she would be an amazing co-chair. That would be number one. You know, big fan of Rihanna, big fan of Jay-Z, big fan of, I know my kids would be really happy if like Sabrina Carpenter did it with me.
Yeah, sure. So,
trying to stay like mom relevant also. yeah, that's sort of the vibe I'm going for.
I love that. I love that.
Jen Aniston. I don't think she's ever been to the Met Gala, so maybe this will be the first one she wants to go to.
Oh my gosh. That's wild, actually, to think about.
Yeah, she can co-chair it with me. Sure, if somebody, you know, we could do a really cool denim and diamond look for her.
What's a piece that you'd love to create for, like, that kind of occasion?
You know, I think for me, it's always really important to design pieces that people can wear all the time. I think that the days of people buying pieces and putting it in their safe and using it only for special occasions, I mean, that kind of feels like it's over. And there's nothing chicer than seeing women like wear your diamonds and wear with a pair of jeans and a great white t-shirt and a cute loafer and like get out of the house, you know? And so it would just have to be a really incredible type of tennis necklace, but that could be wearable tennis necklace.
Yeah, I love that. And also just wear the things that you love, like use the things that you that are precious to you. Don't save because life is short too, right?
I mean, I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So when you think about the next 20 years, what excites you the most about the road ahead for the brand?
You know, I can't believe it's been 20 years. Seems like that went really, really fast. And I couldn't imagine that I'd be where I am now. I'm really open to, you know, what does the universe have in store? In all ways, personally, professionally. I'm just excited to keep on designing jewelry. I love that we did our perfume and our candle and our hand cream. That was a really fun extension for the brand. Mm-hmm. So all the, you know, just keep on designing.
Is there an area that you've always wanted to play in that you've not had really the opportunity to yet and that you would love to explore or unpack further down the road?
You know, I do love clothing. I really do love clothing, but there are so many people that do it so well. I have done 2 seasons of clothing with Barney's. It was Jennifer Meyer XO, Barney's XO, Jennifer Meyer. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. And it sold out and it did amazing. It was phenomenal. And that was really fun for me. So I love clothing.
Would you ever go back into it, you think?
You know, that with the right partner, sure.
Yeah.
I think I know myself well enough. Like, I don't know that world. I don't know how to produce. Like, if you wanted to start a jewelry business, I could give you an outline in 60 minutes, 90 minutes, what to do, what not to do, who to call, how to make it happen. All the things I learned over 20 years. And it would take me a long time to learn how to create a whole new business of clothing. You know,
sure.
People that do it, they do it great. They really do it great.
Yeah. Yeah. Last question. You know, on our show, we talk to leaders who are building things that matter, building things in their industry or community that resonate. When you think about your work, what do you ultimately want and hope your contribution to be in the world of design and culture and entrepreneurship?
I think for me, the thing about jewelry is that it's a moment and it's something meaningful and it's something sentimental. And there's not a woman that I don't know that won't look into their jewelry box or their drawer and they will remember who bought them that piece of jewelry, what the occasion was, where were they when they received it, or when they bought it for themselves, how much it cost them, what their investment was, what made them want to buy it, the initials, their mother's piece, their grandmother's piece. I love that so much of what I design is emotional, it's sentimental, it sends a message of good luck, love, protection. And I really try and design pieces that will withstand the test of time and that you're not going to look in your jewelry box in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years and be like, oh, why did I buy that Jen Meyer piece? That people are going to want to take those pieces and give them to their daughter, their granddaughter, however it is. So I think that that is a really important narrative for me to be a part of, to know that like when I'm designing, I'm really thinking about this piece being in your collection for a lifetime. And other people's collections for a lifetime.
Yeah, I love that. Modern heirlooms.
Yeah, exactly.
Jen, thank you so much for this wonderful chat. I've really loved just listening to your stories and your perspectives, and it's been a really fun chat. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.